personally involve yourself, this is a point of attention also, must be national and international in scope as well. We think also it is of singular significance that the leaders of national and local civil rights and human rights organizations and hundreds of private citizens from all walks of life that ask us to express their general and specific concerns. And they share our hope that this is not a pro forma, one-time, a kind of exchange. The like of say will be even that this must be only the beginning of a continuing exchange aimed at permanently changing through persistent and far-reaching action the harsh conditions under which all choosing for by another best Americans are forced to live. So we recommend that at the end of this meeting we agree on some mechanism for ensuring continued productive peace. Because if the black foreign press, in fact, wants to achieve the policy of this country, then the government must have, through persuading the attainment of certain accomplishments, we cite these categorically as eradication policies dealing with nations which reflect racial overtones. Living on all deployable persons or the means to provide dignity to work that's unavailable. Decent housing for our families and equal access to the total housing market. Fair and impartial justice. Adequate protection against drug abuse and crime. The enforcement of civil rights and other constitutional guarantees. Through vigorous affirmative action. Fair distribution of public funds that are used to support business and community development, and democratically representative participation in determining how tax dollars are spent in our communities. And of course, the guarantee of ample health care for all citizens from the federal government. Strict compliance to federal standards, guarantees, and programs financed by federal funds. Participation at all levels by members of our communities in the executive, judicial, and legislative branches of our government. And finally, Mr. President, these current needs have a significant bearing on the disenchantment of the black community over our involvement in those factors. And it is our unanimous desire that the United States military forces and related subject forces have withdrawn promptly from all regions in that area. We're not here, Mr. President, to merely recite what might be considered disappointments from the past. We're here to try to present the first of a series of constructive proposals for the need for leaders of our communities for making America in the 70s a whole and a healthy nation. We're fully aware of the power of the presidency to achieve progressive change. Every sector of our society tends to look to the White House for achievements, for the direction that our national society will be taking. When those views seem negative or contradictory or half-hearted, the public then takes them to be evidence of disinterest or disagreement on the part of the policy. Equality of all Americans to be a reality is the necessity of the world to express commitment to our protection. Every official in each federal department in Washington, in the regional offices of the state, every governor, mayor, and county official, and local school board must understand clearly the direction in which any administration is heading. So the recommendations which follow represent our study proposals based on opinions volunteered by organizations and individuals from all over the country. We have not attempted to rank them in any order of priority. We feel that all effective immediate action on all of these is essential to the long overdue task of being a truly inspired nation. We do not claim that these comprehensive agenda of meetings or remedial actions. We do believe that they represent more than merely a good beginning. In the days, weeks, and months that fly ahead, we hope to remain in touch with you and in terms of your administration on this excursion meetings. When you're discussing these recommendations in the public meeting, we will be focusing on credit action that can be taken immediately, as well as on legislative programs that can be assessed upon the nature and intensity of the support we receive from our partners. With that background, Mr. President, I'd like to
concise one is the opinions of our office.
out of the president to again, to your system to highlight her area of special expertise.
Mr. President, my special area centers around the problems of the veterans in this country. The accumulation of voluminous complaints on the part of these veterans in the military, both abroad and at home, now necessitates, I believe at this point, the establishment of a civil rights division within the Department of Defense to make sure that black soldiers do get equitable justice, both in the military abroad and at home. There's no question about it that many of us have been receiving so many complaints and many substantiated cases indicating that this is a problem that cannot be swept under the rug. We must be very concerned about what is really going to happen if these gentlemen return to their land and find that the question of justice still has not been settled. Secondly, I feel that it's very important that in some way the Department of Justice and State Department and the Defense Department have some kind of coordinated effort in handling the complaints of the black soldiers, of minority soldiers. Mr. President, I cannot express to you my deep concern about this because of the fact that being a member of the Veterans Affairs Committee in the United States House of Representatives, I am constantly in contact with this kind of problem which is escalating day by day, and those are the 2 points that I wanted to address myself to
upon the notion that we would re-meet, if possible, in 60 minutes giving
question. So all I can say to you is that there is an atmosphere of oppression and racism in this country that it seems to me, with all respect, is not deeply felt enough by the administration in the White House. And it seems that it's our responsibility to try to bring to you as clearly and as accurately as we can our impressions on this very important subject. And the question of our foreign relations, we mentioned South Africa specifically, but Mozambique and those related areas which are, there's a great struggle for freedom going on in Africa, weren't mentioned. It isn't because we're not interested in bringing those countries in which there's fighting going on between Portugal and France. The Guinea situation, in which Portugal's invasion of Guinea was prevented from the kind of censures that the UN should have done because the United States would have vetoed it, is a very serious and critical matter, with three of us, four of us, just having returned from Africa in the last 30 days. Now, Mr. President, many have suggested to me, and I've been in continual arguments with people who have said to us, we shouldn't even be at this meeting. I think we should be less than candid not to present an alternate point of view that many in the black community view this as a kind of a meeting in which we're going to pass rhetoric between each other, and that we're some one or both groups are going for the political mind, and we would best have served our true and genuine interests of the black community and the nation by declining the meeting. I had on three occasions to publicly have to argue in defense of us meeting after a year's attempt. And so I want to say that our credibility is on the line in this meeting, as well as everyone else here in this room. Now the question, some immediate questions of the system of justice in this country, is deplorable. Jesse Jackson said to me the last thing when he called me, tell the president about blacks in jail. He doesn't mean just the black people that have gotten put in jail through miscarriages of justice, but the entire legal system, from the way it starts in the courts, to the prosecutors, to the police, to the penal system, it's really one complex in our society that all of us have to begin to look to in a very real way. Finally, I got a call from Richard Hatcher, the mayor of Gary, going out of the office today about the terrible pressure that they're under. And it's not bipartisan. It's not a Republican versus Democrat system in which they are being systematically prevented from registering black voters in the number of ways that he's documented that the Justice Department involved themselves in it prior to the election. There are ways, of course, we know that that can be done. And finally, the last item was a question that to me sums up the dilemma that black people in this country are up against. Because a fellow that decided, a black man in Detroit, Richard O'Mary, our brother O'Mary, formerly Richard Henry, lived in my district, worked for the federal government, who is now the head of the Republic of New Africa, who moved to Mississippi to set up a community that has the intention of removing itself from the American scene, just called in twice in my office today, and then another girl from Mississippi called in about the fact that the Mississippi State Police, 30 miles outside of Jackson, Mississippi, are preventing them from having a two-day celebration in which they promote the land that they bought for Mississippi and the activity going on in their community. And that the police, there's violence going on there now. They're calling us desperately for help. And it seems to me, Mr. President, to symbolize the dilemma of black people in America. They can't integrate, they can't separate. They're caught in a tremendous vice first of a series of comings together where we can sincerely lay aside partisan considerations and deal with the problems that have been put to you on this agenda. Thank you.
Mr. President, I'm glad that the representatives of the State Department is not here so that perhaps you can get the full impact of the concerns of what at one time was considered to be a conspiracy of genocide. Since the explosion of the drug addict population is now overflowed into the white majority, there's no question that we can no longer deal with problems of crime, justice, military, health, education, job opportunity, or job training, unless we concern ourselves with what is happening with the inflow of drugs into the United States. I'm a former assistant United States attorney. There are 9 committees in the House of Representatives that are concerning themselves with the problem of drug addiction, and one of them is the Select Committee of Crime, which I serve as a member. And all the incentives point to the fact that 80% of the drugs that can be identified as coming into the United States are being grown in Turkey and processed in southern France. And yet, those of us who recognize the history of this country see your representatives going there and dealing with the mayors of these small towns, and yet hundreds of thousands of people, black and white, brown and yellow, are dying because they don't have the opportunity to fully enjoy the American dream and attempt to take the drug as a method of escaping from the problems that we have to face. It is our general opinion, and I haven't heard anything to the contrary, that if there was a strong commitment where this nation was prepared to use its economic strength and certainly its military strength that it has in the past, that we could bring a halt to this condition which is killing off American youth and many of our adults. And what has happened in the thinking of so many people is that in an attempt for America to resolve the problem, our scientists have gone to the methadone program. And this methadone program has, in my district, in Central Harlem, and certainly in other inner cities, have created now a new type of addict, a methadone addict. Methadone is being sold by addicts who have some unique feeling that they're not on hardcore drug. And it seems to me that more and more white America is saying, let's legalize the drug because we can't deal with the problem. Mr. President, our people have fought on the cotton fields and on the battlefield. We think that this problem is important enough as a health problem, as a national security problem, to be dealt with as a national crisis and not one that just powerless people are up against. And in that connection, I'll be only too happy to find out the names of your persons that are working toward a solution of this problem, so that I can turn over all of the evidence that has been collected by the various committees and the various, even your Department of Justice, to substantiate that a crime is being committed against this country, and certainly against the largest segment of this country that can't fight back. And while we don't put confidence in the rumors of genocide, I think your statistics records might indicate that when you go to your jails, you go to your courts, you'll find that 70-80% of the defendants are charged with violating state and federal laws concerning possession and sale of hard drugs of black and non-white. And I think you would acknowledge that 70-80%, which can be substantiated, I say this as a former prosecutor, and I think you will agree with me that black and Puerto Ricans are not the ones that are importing drugs into the United States. They are the ones that the overwhelming majority of them are addicts themselves pushing in order to further their addiction. So it is our plea that, and we sincerely believe that within the State Department, within the power of your office, that there's no need for the multi amount of bills that are in the legislation now, that you do have the power, and we just implore your good graces to use it as you would if it was a national crisis. And I think it's reaching that.
As you know, we've been working on that. Both the church and the practice. And obviously not successfully enough, but I think it's very important that you have such as you have, discuss the mission of our system, get all the buildings to a
the powers with nations that have been friendly to us. And I think that this is the height of unfriendliness when they allow this thing to happen. So that I just don't believe that the Secretary of State should have to sit down with the mayor from Los Angeles. I have too much confidence in my country.
Mr. President, as you should well know, I raised it this morning, actually, in the other towns, and as far as I'm concerned, in any other area. Every man around this table, one of every constituent in my district and in their district, takes what is called a black tax, in housing. That's the extra margin of profit that those people in real estate when they sell or rent to lots. And I think those who espouse this point of view for racism in housing are emboldened and encouraged when we hear statements coming from the administration, statements that are ambiguous on occasion or statements relating to fear by forced integration. I think those statements are often interpreted to me as right, just, and proper to go right ahead imposing a black tax in real estate on black people who seek to rent or seek to buy. So in the area of housing, we have a whole host of recommendations. I call your specific attention to you, not because they are more impactful than the others, but because immediate action by you can do something to reduce the problems associated in these two recommendation areas. The first is we call for the immediate release of all the supplemental fiscal year 1971 funds of $150 million for housing and public housing. As you well know, this money was appropriated, it's been embargoed, these funds are frozen, being consumed by your office. And in light of the situation that lets black folks be exploited at every level in the field of housing, it's only fair and decent and honorable to release these funds so that we can go into the area of public housing. Second recommendation is the implementation of the Uniform Relocation Act to ensure that an adequate stock of low and moderate income housing for displaced persons is made available. Your office, by immediate action, to move in this area. All too often, the problem has been that when black folks are moved, there are so many for them to go because of the racism that's extant in this country. No housing for them to move into, and the result is that they're forced into other black areas to take the increases, and we find instant slums being created because of what were presumed to be desirable efforts initially. Those two, Mr. President, with one question that I would like to put to you, and I would hope that you would respond to it later on, perhaps not at this juncture. We understand you requested a legal opinion on the authority of the federal government to intervene in situations where suburban or other jurisdictions refuse to permit the inclusion of low and moderate income housing. We have this situation in Maryland and in Baltimore County surrounding the city of Baltimore. Before we leave, if you would please share with us and with the public the legal opinion you've received on this critical matter, I think would be very helpful to us.
Gentleman from Ohio, Mr. Stokes.
President, Dr. Edwards, we've given you this afternoon. We treat one section as being federal officials, state and local government. In this particular section, we urge you, Mr. President, to have a much broader concept of revenue sharing other than revenue sharing bill being proposed by you. As Congressman, many of us during the past session of Congress have sponsored and supported and voted for bills in the area of additional aid to education, housing, urban renewal, sewage facilities, health and education. Past bills, which of course you saw fit to veto during the past term. We're not here to rehash past instances, but there's a myriad of problems which confront the larger areas which we represent. We're unable to think in terms only of revenue sharing as being operational expenses, or money for operational expenses to be given to these large cities. We cite, to you, for instance, Mr. President, the fact that there's something that you can do today, that in our total concept of revenue sharing, general revenue sharing, something that could be done by executive order today. That's the release of the $800 million that's now been frozen in already appropriated funds. This includes some $200 million for mass transit, $200 million for water and sewer grants, $200 million for urban renewal. In addition to this, we think that revenue sharing also takes in the concept of treating the present unemployment situation in this country. We strongly urge you to support an emergency public service employment bill. If I were to just cite to you two of the large urban communities which are represented this table this afternoon, City of Detroit has just recently had to lay off 600 employees and now has 2,600 vacancies in their city hall. Cleveland, mayor there has had to lay off 1,500 employees within the last 3 months. And additionally, Mr. President, oftentimes when you refer to the unemployment situation in America today, you make reference to the national average of 6%. We would call your attention to the fact that the Department of Labor Statistics from 1970 showed that in large urban poverty areas, the young black men ages 16 to 19, that average nationally was 35%. The last quarter of 1970, it was 42.2%. These are figures that we have to deal with, regardless of the average of 6%. We urge you in this section on the question of welfare nationalization and reform. We say to you that we do not see welfare nationalization and welfare reform as being a substitute or an alternate for a revenue sharing bill. We see these as being necessary in addition to some form of financial aid to citizens. We propose to you a change in the formula which you have in your bill. You deal, of course, with 1.3% of the taxable personal income. We take the figure of 1.5%, 0.2% above your figure. General revenue sharing, Mr. President. We recommend that you take 1% of the taxable personal income and let it be distributed to all welfare disbursing units on a basis reflecting the proportion of national welfare costs paid by that unit. I think then we're treating the needs of our large urban centers where they have these large welfare costs. Then we take the 0.5% of the taxable personal income and have it distributed to all local units who did not share in the above distribution with reference to a cutoff figure of some 50,000. Cities with a population of under 50,000 would not participate. We do this because under the population formula which you use in your bill, let us cite four examples here. We see many areas of the country where they don't have the needs or the problems that we're confronted with benefiting from the kind of a formula which you have. Take Grosse Pointe Woods, Michigan. Under your formula, they receive $129,000. Under our formula, such a community would not receive any benefit. Palm Beach, Florida receives $333,000. Wellesley, Massachusetts receives $439,000. Beverly Hills, California receives $811,000, almost $1 million. We think that under the formula which we have and the computation we've made, by citing just four cities, it would benefit much greater from the utilization of the formula which we have. Baltimore would go from $14 million to $30 million. Chicago from $47 to $113 million. Los Angeles from $34 million under your formula to $94 million under ours. St. Louis from 15 million under your formula to 20 million under ours. The last point we make in the section document is that you have already taken recognition of the fact that Title VI of the Civil Rights Act ought to be applied to these funds that go into the states and cities without any strings attached. But we feel additionally that since Title VI is in essence a declaration of national policy, it does not many times get to the pragmatic situation of discriminatory action in many localities around the country. And Title VII, which also has an equal employment opportunity provisions, ought to be made applicable to any such financial assistance given to cities and states.
I ask one question, certainly as well, Governor. What is the position of the caucus opposed to the assistance program or principles or external or external?
That's where it's achieved by someone else's.
Well, if you have somebody else's mind, how do you build welfare? Is it balanced with welfare? I think you want to go first. Probably one of the others,
yes.
I know you mentioned the national situation.
I didn't go into
usually a lot of referring. I know someone else heard something else.
Yes, sir.
You're referring to the suggestion that does support the resolution.
Right, Mr. Chairman, can you make it clear that our the caucus position paper is a general compendium of these 60 recommendations and is not the hard views of any member?
For example, if I can get you out, I want to take your time on this. So I will get your three back. I want to make it clear. I understand on many of these issues that you're not going to come up with this stuff. Say, like, on campus, that some of you may figure that. So I don't like this provision. I don't like this provision. I understand that. I mean, but I just wanted to, before we got through this, see whether there was a general feeling complete one way or another. That's something we're going to be fighting a bullet on within another couple of months and go to most of the course of the president we hope. Is that right?
Because HR 1
is to be able to do the job.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. President. To the document, we will do some rather specific recommendations with respect to foreign policy and Congressman John Conyers.
You're a foreign affairs, aren't you?
Yes, ma'am. Congressman Conyers mentioned a few others that we haven't included to this report. But I'd like to come to the critical issue that I'm sure you're just as much aware of as we are. And that is the question of America's involvement in China. The point we'd like to make here is that blacks in America are extremely concerned about America's involvement in China. But perhaps many of the same reasons that other Americans are concerned about it, we are people who wish to have peace in Indochina, we wish to have peace in the world. We're concerned about our involvement in Indochina as blacks, certainly because of wars being waged on the basis of disproportionately on the backs of blacks, other racial minorities, poor and working class whites. We as blacks believe that our involvement in Indochina is extraordinary human and economic strain, perhaps one of the greatest in modern times. And thirdly, we consider it at this point a major tragedy that a great deal of our funds are being directed into militarism, wars, death, and destruction, while providing concerns of 25 million blacks, millions of other racial minorities, and millions of other poor and destitute people who are screaming for help in the country. Desperately need programs that are, at this point, underfunded or not even addressed as yet. And we're saying as blacks that we want swift, prompt ends of war in China. We'd like very much this country to proceed actively on the course of peace. We'd like this country to move away from the extraordinary amount of revenue going into war and militarism, and turn those funds, redirect those funds into desperately needed programs that affect the lives of substantial numbers of human beings and affect the black community in a very dramatic way. going to be occupied for a long time, staying technologically, competing technologically with other major powers. We, in fact, have dropped behind educationally in many, many other areas, other countries. We think we ought to be as concerned about being competitive with respect to human questions, human rights, human resources, and dealing with critical problems. Warning of China and military is very, very key to that. Because as long as we continue to spend extraordinary amounts of revenue on war and death, the people in this country, blacks in this country, certainly will continue to be the recipients of pain and sorrow that all children in America face. So we're asking you, as the chief executive officer of the country, set aside, we're saying here in this document, some of us would like to see immediately withdraw. Some, a little more gradual withdrawal this year. We made a statement as a joint group that we'd like to see an end to the war, hopefully by the end of this year, certainly by the end of the 92nd Congress. We'd like to see us start to use millions of dollars that we appropriate to militarism to start dealing with critical and vital domestic programs.
Let me say that, in fact, I think I should say a word on this subject because it's one that is meant to fall under whatever your committees are. Actually, you know that this has been a difficult problem for many of us, I'm sure my predecessors. But I think it is important to note that I noticed at the outset that you pointed out that this is a Republican president. You're all Democratic congressmen. The problem of war and peace, however, is not Democratic Republican. We're all confused. It's a question how we get it and how we can best preserve it. I should point out that I'm being an old partisan, but as the Republican vice president, when I left Washington in 1961 in January, there was no American in Vietnam in combat, and no American that had been killed in Vietnam. None. When I came back as president, 8 years later, there were 550,000 Americans. 30,000 have been killed. We were spending approximately $26 billion a year. There was no plan, whatever, after 8 years of Democratic administration, no plan, whatever, to reduce the number. As a matter of fact, Clark Clifford said in October of last year that there could be no withdrawal in the agency from Vietnam until we had to withdraw, which was probably sometime in the year 1969 or early. I do not say that particularly. My predecessors in office, they I know, were certainly as devoted to peace. The hardest thing the president does is to sign a letter to somebody whose child has been killed or next to the campus. But I think you should know that while we haven't gone as fast as some of you want to make some progress, the amount of money has been cut in half. The number of men has been cut in half. The number of casualties was 5 times straight per month. But we came in as it is now. And in April, I will be making another announcement, which will, I think, be noted with perhaps considerable approval by all of you members. I can simply say this. I know what's happening. Everything that I have done, the program for training the South Vietnamese, the operation in Cambodia, which reduced the number of jobs, had one objective, not to expand the world.
Latin America and the Middle East, continues to receive significant political resources from the U.S. people in the Islam after this term. There is a need there that was so well established, which you know, the only person in the series, we would just like to emphasize this as a collective. Affinity for Black Americans. Charles, let me ask one question. I read your section on this because I knew your own concern. But you had a question leading out to the portion. What does he have to do for the trade, the bridge, et cetera, in terms of their programs that I find in my talks with the African leaders who can say, yes, they would prefer to have U.S. On the other hand, the Europeans and other involved countries have to play their role. So let's get Regina Word telling they think it's really good of having countries that have farmer colonial relationship now participating in anything or advancing us as countries.
No, I don't show
I'm sorry, I got you. I'm in judiciary.
would like to work on appropriations matters with the, you've got, well, let me say first, you've got the Irvin and Weinberg, because he knows state government, he knows federal government, and he's a budgeteer, he has to be, but he's a man also who knows the problems he comes from the San Francisco area, knows the problems in the city, concerned about the problems. George Schultz, of course, is the overall head of the office, but his cast of man is over 500,000 subsidized housing units. And this, for low moderate income families, now this is an area where they, where we really don't get much credit because there's a tremendous housing shortage nationally. But again, we welcome your help in a number of areas where we really need the help in terms of managing these housing units and some of the others.
Operation. Properly addressed. As we
can go through an officer where we, the main thing is like the whole legislative process, presented. As you should. I'm glad you have the information. I know your concerns. I appreciate what's had to say and try to get this question through effectively. This is one of the times. So, we're getting credit of the creating that water shape in this country. Conception of this citizens, I know that. I mean, I know that, given, of course, the frustration. Sometimes there's a tendency for many of the life community to think of a very few who may have given up on the system as you have not given up. This is the way it all is. But I think the thing about this kind of meeting that is important is just that while we're not in the same party, we are all elected. You all won. And that shows you. You can come in, you can be heard. I want that all always to be understood. Not only can be heard, but where we can't, we want to know. But as I said, yeah, I want to be honest about it. You wouldn't want people to come in here. So you would do everything. I think if there's been one race there, there have been many relations of whites and blacks and Americans. But the greatest has been demagoguery and promising.